A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking once again about what's going on in Massachusetts, where confusion reigns. So we're now a week after somewhat effective date, of the sweeping new gun control laws in Massachusetts. And the state has sort of belatedly said, okay, we're going to delay the implementation of some of these things, right? The last time we talked about this was a week ago, the day that this law was supposed to take effect. And, you know, we were hearing from gun stores that they were basically selling out of all of their inventory because they weren't sure that they're going to be able to sell anything going forward that wasn't on the firearms roster. So basically long guns, which are now defined as firearms in Massachusetts. That's a new change. None of those long guns were on the roster of firearms that were approved for sale in Massachusetts. Then you had the new training requirements that were supposed to take effect, but the training curriculum hasn't been written by the state of Massachusetts. And again, you know, August 1st comes, and there's been basically no word from the state. Well, there has been some word now. Over the past couple of days, the state has let firearms instructors know that, okay, you can keep going for now, anyway, while we're writing this new curriculum. But it, again, this is ridiculous. They had over a year to craft this legislation, and they did so in such a way that it is still, to the state, impossible to really know what's going on. The lawsuits have started, thankfully, and so hopefully we'll get some relief in court. But we're going to be talking with Nolan Howard and Derek Hubble, firearm instructors from Boston, here in just a moment or two about the latest, as well as a upcoming rally at Boston Common, where they're hoping that gun owners will turn out in force to show their objections to these new infringements. Before we get to that conversation, let's talk about this for a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. Now let's talk about what's going on in Massachusetts. The latest with Nolan Howard and Derek Hubble. Take a look and a listen.
Nolan, Derek, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's good to see both of you.
Thank you.
Likewise.
Yeah, so I just got to ask, first of all, what has the past week been like here with some of the provisions of Chapter 135 now in effect? Can you conduct training? Is that still a no-go? I mean, the last I saw, the Massachusetts State Police said as of August 1st, the new training requirements were in effect, even though the new training curriculum hasn't been written yet.
We can. It has been basically put on pause until October 23rd.
Yeah. Okay. So they've hit the pause button while they're writing this curriculum. What has been the reaction from, you know, folks who are trying to get their training? Have you all seen a rush on folks who are starting to apply now saying, okay, I better get this done now before these new requirements kick in?
A lot of people actually don't know for the most part. The reason being is because it's not the bill is not being talked about like by mainstream Massachusetts media.
Yeah.
So when I get calls from people trying to book a class, I'll answer and talk to them and just give them a very fast rundown of, you know, hey, this is the deadline. And they were like, I had no idea. It's kind of like snuck up on people. And that has made it. So there isn't really that like big rush, I would say, of people scrambling unless they already know or in the know about this.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead, Nolan. I'm sorry.
It's the same thing for me. Like I tell people, I mean, I had past students saying, hey, you know, I applied for my license. I'm like, hey, you might want to get it in because October 23rd, there's like a deadline for a new curriculum. And there's nothing that I can do about it after if you pass that threshold. So you may have to do the whole thing over. So I've been talking to people that took my class in the past year, year and a half, for the ones who are still procrastinating, unfortunately, just to get in. Because if not, there's really nothing I can do or anybody can do. So it's like you would have to follow the new procedure, whatever the state's going to, whenever they're going to get to it. So,
yeah. And, you know, you're right about the media coverage. I mean, I'm here in Virginia, so I'm looking at things, you know, on the internet and through a distance. But I've been amazed at just the tone of the coverage. I mean, there's so much talk about this bill being, you know, almost exclusively about, you know, ghost gun bans, bans 3D printing. I've seen really zero coverage of the impact to trainers, to would-be gun owners, the impact on gun sales in the state. Do you think the media is intentionally trying to downplay this, or do you think we've got reporters who don't know this issue who are completely clueless about what's actually in this bill?
I think it's a mixture of both.
You
have to, one, understand that a lot of the news that's pushed in Massachusetts is going to end up having some kind of liberal bias for the most part. But the other thing is that I think that they're wholly ignorant and not in a not in a bad way. Like they just don't know. You know, I've contacted a news reporter at Channel 5 that covers a political subject matter, and have just tried to inform, hey, here's this whole email that I received. If you'd like to look into it, hopefully, you know, whether they want to run a story on it or not, you know, but it would, I would say it, they would be the first people to actually be discussing it, you know, on the mass general public accessibility type news platform.
Yeah. Well, is that one of the reasons why you want to have this rally, just to obviously get gun owners together, but to even raise awareness of what this law does?
So, yeah, the point of the rally would be for awareness, most definitely. A lot of people that are in the 2A space, people that are gun owners already, they're the ones that know about it. Maybe they might not know to the full extent all of the how the bill is going to function. A lot of people still have questions about, you know, hey, this passed, or can I do this, or can I do that? They're unsure of what they can purchase or if they can build something. If this is going to impact, you know, their training or anything to that degree. So getting them informed properly of everything that we know at the rally is going to benefit them, but also just help to potentially get anybody that doesn't have any information already. Maybe people that are moderates, maybe they're not truly active in the gun space. You know, they might own one gun, maybe they own no guns, you know, and we feel that everyone should know, because if this can happen to that particular set of rights, then it could happen to any. I mean, this happened behind closed doors. They did this without public involvement the second time around. The first time that Rep Day had gone, he was only speaking to very small audiences. Like he went to, I believe, like 11 clubs throughout the state. And I can only imagine that the turnout was quite small, because the dates weren't like readily known in advance to a lot of people. So, you know, you might not have been able to get to the club in time to talk to this person. So when they say that they had public involvement, it's not a good, I would say, example of how the constituents actually feel, because it's such a small fraction.
Yeah. Well, and Nolan, I mean, the way this was written, you know, again, so Michael Day goes off on his listening tour, and some of those stops, it was the audience listening to Representative Day and gun control activists, right? In fact, there were complaints about that. He said, all right, we'll kind of switch things up a little bit. But, you know, as you say, this bill went through so many revisions. The House introduced their version, mass opposition, so they pull it back. The Senate passes a very different version, Then they meet together behind closed doors. They come up with this, you know, compromise bill that nobody has public input on, right? Because the basically the day after they introduced it, they vote on this. I mean, you know, Nolan, this just leaves the content of this law is bad enough, but the process of how this was put in place is also, I think, something that is worth talking about and worth criticizing, because this is not, to me anyway, this is not how the sausage should get made here.
Right. I mean, the way they did it, they just wanted to rush it. So like, see, hey, we did it. There's no way that these people could have read 116 pages within 24 hours. It's just, it's unheard of. And I think if a lot of former state reps kind of went back and actually read the, you know, the bill and stuff, they would probably have a different outlook. And I think it was just, I think it's like either Monero's last, this is last year, the House, you know, so this was kind of like his bread and butter to say, hey, look, I did something for the people that voted him in. And it's just, I think it was just for like a political stunt, and it just really wasn't true and genuine, like, especially when they came into Roxbury. No one in Roxbury knew that Representative Day came, because no one knew about it. Even when I was shocked when they did, oh, yeah, we're coming this day. I'm like, and a lot of people were mad. So it's like they didn't know about it. So he just wanted to rush it. And it's a travesty. That's
yeah. Well, I am glad at least that the was it the state police that reached out and said, OK, you guys could keep doing the old training until October.
Yeah.
And when was it? That had to have been like July 31st or August 1st. I mean, because I know I talked to you, Nolan, just a couple of days before this law took effect, and you said you hadn't heard anything from the state police.
Yeah, we didn't hear anything until like what? They emailed us what, a couple of weeks ago there?
Yeah, it was shortly thereafter. It was like last week. They first initially sent out one email that said any certificates issued after August 1st may not be valid based right. off of the fact that there's they are not using the new curriculum. Then a lawsuit was filed. Yep. So they backpedaled very quickly because you cannot pause someone's constitutional rights. I don't know who thought that would have ever been something feasible. But the lawsuit that was filed by Jason Guida, I believe, Com2A, I think Goal may have been involved as well. And they got that stopped for the meantime. So until 10/23, we're allowed to run the regular standard curriculum. So there's 26 courses that you can take in Massachusetts. You know, from the class with the Chief of Police Association to a couple NRA courses. And then there are some companies in Massachusetts that have their own, you know, they've come up with their own curriculum that's been approved by the state police. So there's like 26 different courses. And I think that this is something that Massachusetts views as, hey, like, you know, we have all of these different courses. What are they teaching? You know, let's try and build out a curriculum that has all of these things that we want in there, so we ensure that everyone is getting all of this information, which a lot of it is, a lot of it's not necessary, you know, in my opinion, in regards to it. I'm someone, yeah, I'd happily close up my business if we went constitutional carry in this state. I would have zero problems with that. But what they're trying to do is going to make it extremely difficult to have your teacher regular course potentially, like my whole schedule will have to change. You know, they come 10/23 and they say, hey, here's this test. Now we've created this test that you're going to have to issue. And then here's the information regarding disengagement tactics that you have to teach. Here's the information regarding safety, like all of this stuff. So we go from teaching a class that's somewhere around like 4 hours or so, if you're just doing like a home safety course, to now this course without the live fire, because that portion isn't being implemented for 18 months. You're probably going to be looking at a class that could be 6 hours long. No one's really sure at how long the length will be, but with the added subject matter, it's like I'm not going to be able to have the class starting at 6 p.m. because people won't be leaving until midnight.
Right.
Right.
I didn't realize that they had delayed the live fire aspect for 18 months because there's nothing like that in the bill. I mean, this seems like the state is just making it up as they go along at this point.
That's what they're doing. They're making up stuff because I'm like, there was nothing. There's no live fire. It wasn't mandatory. Even like I do a home firearm safety, I still encourage my students, hey, schedule time with me after, just to get the live fire to go over, what we did for the 4 hours. Because, sometimes you have that life, you forget. So you want to kind of just keep it fresh, fresh in their head. And it's just, I didn't see anything. I think it's just full of crap. A lot of clubs now are kind of at the mercy of it. But they don't have to because it's private. So it's a debacle. We don't even know how it's going to work. What is it? There's like 6 probably total local clubs in the whole state there, right? So.
All right. If we're talking about like open public ranges that you can just, the for-profit clubs, the ones that are like businesses, is what Nolan's referring to, like where you can go and rent a gun and rent lane time. There's a handful of those in the state, and then everywhere else is private club that you have to be a member of to join. And those clubs typically already have someone selected from their members to instruct, someone that has been certified with the state police or whatnot to teach whatever class. It's typically an NRA class because all of the private clubs are typically NRA based, for insurance reasons and things like that. So it's understandable. But at the same time, like I was discussing yesterday on a local YouTube program, this puts the 5,000 plus instructors in the state at odds. What do they do? Where do they go? What type of space are they going to have access to? If the clubs are willing to work with the instructors, then there may be, it might not be too bad, but you're going to see a lot of these people start to drop off. I've had a couple people that are instructors already tell me like, hey, I don't know how I'm going to be able to hold the class once this new curriculum comes out, or once the live fire portion gets put in play, because they just don't have the connections, the access or the time. So it's creating a problem for people's income. If this is either their secondary source of income, maybe it's their primary source of income. Maybe they're just used to teaching a course that does not have any live fire, and they were very good at teaching it, and they had a regular amount of students. Like those people, if they don't want to comply with what's going on, then they have to shut their books and move on, which is it's only going to end up hurting us in the end, because a good analogy would be like if you went to a deli and there was only one person serving all of the people in line at the deli. You're going to have a big traffic jam. People are going to start getting aggravated, and then they just kind of give up. I don't need deli meat today, right? So then you're going to end up with people saying, I'll try this some other time. And then they forget. I've seen this happen before, just with people even taking the course and then forgetting, or they lose their certificate or something. Years goes by. They contact me. Hey, Derek, I lost my certificate, and I'm like, yeah, you took a class with me 2 years ago. So these are things that I think we're going to end up seeing exacerbated to a large degree. Is it's just going to, it's what they want. They want people to have a hard time accessing their right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you're right. That's not a bug. This is a feature of the bill, right? Because I think the intent is to chill the exercise of the Second Amendment. By the way, I'm not sure what happened to Nolan there, but hopefully he'll be able to rejoin us here in a second. Hey, there we go. All right. So before we wrap things up here, give us the particulars. Give us the details on this this rally that's going to be taking place. When, where, and how can folks get involved?
So the rally is going to be August 24th at 10 a.m. It's at the Parkman Bandstand in Boston Common, which is if you live in the state, it's a, most people know about it. If they know about the Boston Common, it's kind of like, you can't miss it. It's a big dome shaped type podium, circular stage. And if anyone is looking to help, they want to offer assistance, they can send an email to me at 2abostonrally@gmail.com. We're looking for people who have an interesting story that they'd like to tell in regards to, like, maybe they own a firearms business and how impactful it's been to their community. Or it could be someone who's bought, you know, an infringement on their right or that's always a great story. You know, they have firsthand experience and knowledge of how difficult it was potentially to, you know, either try and get their license granted to them through some type of like process where they had to sue. So there's plenty of people out there. I'd love to speak with them. We are looking for someone that has like an EMT certification, as we're looking for like 1 to 2 people to provide any type of medical assistance if need be. It's August. It can get hot and humid up here. So people are going to potentially have issues with heat stroke, you know, things like that, that are just kind of common to rallies and marches and things like that. So we're always looking for help like that. Waters, people to hang flyers, and potentially we're going to need some people that are very well organized, because we are hoping that we have these petition sheets to turn this law into a ballot measure. And if we do, the sheets are listed by county. So this has to, you know, be someone with great organizational skills to be able to have these all separated and take good care of them. Because if you have an errant pen mark, a coffee stain, anything like that, the whole entire petition sheet with 25 signatures will get thrown away. So it's a very, very strict process. We are going to have some tables set up, and hopefully we have these sheets given to us by the state in time, because then we can start collecting signatures early. We only have 60 days, I believe, is what Toby told me yesterday in my conversation with him. So 60 days to get 50,000 signatures is the requirement. But obviously, if you get 50,000, you're going to have, let's just say, 5,000 that get thrown out or something right. like that. So we'd like to try and get 70 or Toby is shooting for the moon, but he'd like to get 100.
I mean, I think it's possible if you tell everybody. I know a couple people that I know said they can get like 10 to 15 people per people. So it's just, you just have to let people know, hey, if you know people, like I said, I'm the president of NAGA, my group, the National African American Gun Association in Boston. I know right then and then, that's like, I got like 15 plus people plus instructors who know people. So it's like, you got to know other people. You know people, just tell them, like, hey, if you live in the Boston area, meet me here. Here's your ballot. No, give it back to me, whatever. So it's just word of mouth and social media. Like you said, news, audio, this, it's just wherever. So I know when I talk to Goals personally, when I talk to Mike, he's saying to me that probably next Tuesday or Wednesday, they're going to try to pass in everything, but we'll see. So that's what they're trying to push.
All right. Well, listen, again, I appreciate you guys joining me on the program. We're going to stay up to date on this, and would love to have you back again before the rally on the 24th, so we can give folks a reminder. But thank you guys for, you know, for not rolling over, for not giving up, for standing and fighting against a, you know, frankly, a state government that wants to eradicate this fundamental civil right. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of politicians in Massachusetts who'd be perfectly happy to see the Second Amendment, you know, written out of existence. But, you know, again, there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of gun owners still in Massachusetts. Not all of them are Second Amendment advocates, but thanks to your efforts, hopefully we're going to see more advocates, you know, out of these group of gun owners. So thanks again for everything that you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. Derek, Nolan, we will talk again very soon. Thanks, guys.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Nolan and Derek for joining me on the program. And again, just to give you an idea of how confusing this is, I'm looking here at Goal's website, the Gun Owners Action League website, goal.org. If you go there, they've got a whole page set up for Chapter 135 of the Acts of 2024. This is House Bill of 4485 is now titled, since it has gone into effect. They have a list here of the effective dates for, quote-unquote, assault-style firearms, right? There is multiple dates about grandfathered firearms, things of that nature, one of which dates back to 2016, another dating back to 1994. But then the important one is August 1st. They say the grandfather date for any, quote, assault-style firearms possessed, purchased, and registered on or before August 1st of this year, preventing them from being unlawful, according to the new law that applies to enumerated assault-style firearms, duplicates and copies, as well as those that meet the new two scary features test. So basically all, quote-unquote, assault-style firearms, including unfinished or home-built firearms. The licensing provisions, they say, possibly the last day that new license to carry and firearm ID cards will be issued would be October 23rd. Without a certificate from the state showing that the applicant has taken one of their required training courses under this new curriculum. Possibly, but we don't know for sure. And as Goal says, there's no mandatory timeline for the state police to develop that new curriculum. They do note that licenses issued on or before August the 1st are grandfathered regarding the new training requirements when it comes to renewals, but we're still in this weird limbo where the state has told firearms instructors, okay, yeah, keep going as you've been going until October 23rd. Who knows what happens on October 23rd if that curriculum has not been developed? And then, of course, you've got to have the firearms instructors get certified. So this isn't going to be over in October. Then there are deadlines for registration and serialization. The state has up to 1 year to put this registration system in place. But as Goal says, there doesn't appear to be any grace period for the mandatory registration of firearms starting on October 23rd. So even if the registration system isn't in place, you may still be forced to comply with a mandate that is impossible to comply with. Also, October 23rd, Goal says all guns in the Commonwealth that don't fit specific exemptions must be serialized. If they're not, the state must have a system in place to issue and register new serial numbers to anyone who requests them. And then next July 25th, the state has up to a year to establish the serial number request and issue system, which, again, starting in October, you have to serialize all of your firearms. If you don't, then you're breaking the law. But the state has until next July to come up with a system where you can actually request a serial number. Again, that's another problem here, right? As far as retailers go, again, we were told, and retailers got no guidance whatsoever, that the effective date was August the 1st, maybe August the 2nd. And again, all of these long guns that are now considered firearms would have to be approved for sale. Well, according to the latest guidance from Goal, October 23rd is also now possibly the last date that any retailers can sell any firearms, because whether accidentally or not, all firearms, including long guns, are now included in the new definition of firearm, and firearms are subject to the roster regulations. Goal says that it's unclear as to whether the existing rosters will remain in place or if the state will create new rosters, which, again, is going to take some time. So we've got a little bit of a grace period, I suppose. But this, as I said to Nolan and Derek, I mean, it really does seem like the state is just making it up as they go along at this point. So we'll keep you updated on any additional information coming from the Gun Owners Action League, as well as updates on the litigation. You now have two lawsuits underway challenging the licensing and training aspects of this new law, but there are more lawsuits that are anticipated in the days to come. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this. You know, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, they are leaning in hard on a ban on so-called assault weapons on the campaign trail. And with the volatility from this election, our national debt just breaking $35 trillion for the first time ever, there has never been a better time than now to consider physical gold or silver as a way to protect your savings. If this election goes sideways, there's a good chance that things are going to get even worse. Now, the good news is that there's something you can do now ahead of whatever future chaos might be coming. Wealth Protection Research has found a gold partner in Sasco Gold that specializes in helping everyday Americans protect their retirement accounts like 401ks, IRAs, or TSPs using a loophole that allows them to convert into physical gold or silver tax and penalty free. You can find out more by texting the word TRUTH to 76626 to learn more. That's right. You can break free from your captive retirement account and enjoy the peace of mind knowing that your retirement savings are now stored in physical gold and silver that you control. If you're interested in learning the truth about how you can protect your retirement with gold and silver, you can get a free gold investment kit that explains it all from Sasco Gold just by texting TRUTH to 76626. Drew from Sasco is standing by waiting to help. Just text TRUTH to 76626 and tell Drew that Cam sent you for your free gold investment kit. Text TRUTH to 76626 now. All right. In today's recidivist report, we will turn to the mean streets of Chicago, where CWB Chicago reports that a felon who was on an electronic monitoring device apparently escaped from that electronic monitoring. And then several weeks later went on to allegedly violently mug a 92-year-old man at an ATM. The question is, why was this guy even out on electronic monitoring? 26-year-old DeMarco Roby had been held in jail for a pending armed habitual criminal case. But that ended back in February when a judge reviewing his pretrial conditions under Illinois' Safety Act rejected the state's request to keep him in custody and instead sent Roby home on an ankle monitor. CWB Chicago reports that an escape warrant went out for Roby on July the 3rd after he allegedly left the home where he was supposed to be on house arrest and never went back. Apparently, he must have cut off the GPS monitor device, because otherwise, why wouldn't they have just tracked him using the GPS device? Instead, it was a few weeks later, July 31st, Roby and an unknown accomplice allegedly watched as a 92-year-old man withdrew money from an ATM at a Citgo. After he completed the transaction, Roby and his partner allegedly moved in. Roby accused of punching the nonagenarian in the face and the body, knocking him down to the ground, and according to prosecutors, forcibly taking his wallet. A few hours later, Chicago police arrested Roby and then charged him with robbery with a victim over the age of 60, also charged with escape, and a judge has decided to detain him, at least temporarily, because he posed a safety risk. In her order, Judge Shauna Boliker mentioned Roby's convictions for robbery in 2015, burglary in 2016, two felony gun cases in 2018. He was also charged with escaping from electronic monitoring 6 years ago, but prosecutors dropped that charge when he pleaded guilty to the gun charges. So in 2022, he's now on parole for the gun cases. At that point, it would be, I guess, felon in possession. Chicago police officers said he dropped a gun while running from them in the Inglewood neighborhood. The state moved to revoke his parole, and Roby then remained in custody until Judge Elia Gonzalez decided to put him on house arrest in February. Now, there is an underlying issue here. He was apparently in custody from, you know, late September through February of 2024. So that's about a year and a half while he's awaiting trial. And that's a problem. You know, we do have a right to a speedy trial. And if the criminal justice system is not functioning as it should, and you have people who are stuck in jail for a year or more while they're awaiting trial, you are going to find more judges who say, hey, listen, this isn't appropriate. This person is being punished after he hasn't even been convicted yet, may not even be convicted, which leads to more incidents of people like Roby being released on electronic monitoring. And in some cases, again, in many cases, these individuals are accused of going on to commit crimes while they're out on electronic monitoring or while they're out on bond awaiting trial. That is an issue. But it is also an issue with the criminal justice system. You know, we do have judges who are very soft on criminals. We have prosecutors who are very soft on criminals. But a dysfunctional criminal justice system allows those individuals the opportunity to release prolific offenders back into custody. And that is something that, frankly, doesn't get talked about as much. All right, today's armed citizen story from St. Louis, where a teen robbery suspect has passed away a couple of weeks after he was shot in what police are describing as a justified use of force. This was back on July 20th when the crime took place. It was just before 1:30 in the morning. According to the KTVI-TV in St. Louis, police responded to a call for shots fired around South 9th Street and Russell Boulevard. When they got there, they heard several gunshots. They also saw the occupants of a white SUV pulling an individual into the vehicle before they fled the scene. When they spoke to the victims there, they said that the vehicle, their vehicle was parked, and they were inside. Then four men in dark clothing and ski masks ended up approaching their car. One of the masked men reached through an open door, started taking their belongings. Two others stood armed behind the car. When one of the suspects went to open the car door, the passenger produced his own gun and shot the suspect. The victims managed to escape unharmed, but they told police that they heard gunshots as they were driving away. Shortly after the incident, 15-year-old Giovanni Diaz was dropped off at a local hospital by three men in a white SUV who then immediately drove away. And Diaz, again, sadly, passed away from his injuries this week at some point, apparently. KTVI reporting on that. You know, again, there's no honor among thieves. We don't know the ages of these other suspects because they haven't been taken into custody. But, you know, what happened when their Patriot was shot and injured? Well, they just dropped him off, literally dumped him out there at the hospital door and sped off into the night. I would like to think that stories like this would be a wake-up call for individuals who may be thinking, you know what, people in a parked car, it's late at night, easy target, it's, you know, 4-on-1, 4-on-2. Yeah, you know, there is always the risk that your criminal enterprises are going to be stopped by an armed citizen who is willing and able to protect and defend their lives and the lives of others. And that's exactly what happened here in St. Louis. So we'll keep our eyes open for any details on arrests in this case. But again, the individual who shot the would-be robber not facing any charges. Police have said that there was a justifiable use of force. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An off-duty officer from Chelmsford, Massachusetts, who saved a two-year-old girl in New Hampshire from a near drowning. The officer in question on vacation in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, Officer Matthew Seck, was with his family when he heard the screams coming from the shore of Iona Lake. Seck saw a woman holding her two-year-old daughter who was unconscious and was not breathing at that point. She had just pulled the child out of the water. Chelmsford police say that Seck rushed to the scene, delivered several back blows to the child to expel water from her lungs. The child did regain consciousness at that point. Paramedics arrived a short time later. The child was taken to a local hospital. Has since been released. Is reportedly in good health. And again, all because of the quick thinking of Officer Matthew Seck with the Chelmsford, Massachusetts Police Department, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And Officer Seck, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. Also want to thank you for the well wishes for Miss E. For those of you who tuned in to the very end of yesterday's program, thank you very much. It is, it's still a challenge. We've still got a way to go, but she is feeling minutely better than she did a couple of days ago. So your thoughts and prayers still very much appreciated. We'll be back with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company on Monday, but please do check out BearingArms.com. Between now and then, we've got you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including good news out of Massachusetts, a federal judge there tossing out most of Mexico's lawsuit against U.S. gun makers. We are also continuing to follow the latest anti-gun machinations from the Harris Walls campaign, as well as the media's studious attempts to ignore Kamala Harris's change of heart, supposedly, when it comes to mandatory gun buybacks, and Tim Walz's record as a once a rated politician, and then that, you know, magical transformation that came just as he was running for governor in the state of Massachusetts, no longer representing a pretty pro-gun congressional district there in southern Minnesota. Yeah, amazing how that change of heart happened when it did. But we've got those stories and more all for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP membership or VIP Gold membership. We certainly do appreciate your support. It means a great deal to us in this day and age of a big tech censorship and, frankly, rampant anti-gun media bias. So thank you again for stepping up and supporting our mission here at Bearing Arms. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.